Ladies and gentlemen, it is Warp Tour 2015, and I have the pleasure of being joined by Bill from Silverstein and Silvertooth. But we'll get into that, don't worry. So, how's your Warp Tour experience so far?
Warp's been great this year. It's been a lot of shows. There's a lot of great friends on the tour. I've been having a lot of fun.
None greater than Beartooth because of the Silvertooth. Where did this idea come from?
Well, we actually... I'd say that we really met the guys in Beartooth a year ago, almost to the date, because I don't even really know if we met Caleb through Attack Attack, but we knew about Caleb, and we had heard about Beartooth. We knew some of the guys because they were techs and for different bands. But then last year, around the time of the Alternative Press Awards, which are tomorrow, so it was last year around that time, we met all the dudes and we had planned a tour together. So we did a great tour earlier in the year, and we've been hanging out every day on this tour, and we decided to form a band, Silvertooth, which we'll be performing today for the first and only time.
Wow, we are lucky.
Yeah. I won't say only time, because we'll probably, if it goes well, we'll probably want to do it again.
Awesome, okay. I could at least see a split in the future, but that would be...
Yeah, we would love that, a split. We've been talking about it, Record Store Day or something, but no promises.
We're not holding you to anything, that's cool. All right, so if you'll indulge me, I feel we should talk about your new Silverstein album a little bit. From what I understand, it's the highest charting of the Silvertooth album so far.
Yes, it is, yes. First and only Silvertooth album.
Excellent. All right, so from what I understand, the new album is a little more personal versus the last album, which was, I guess Shane does most of the lyrics, so.
Yeah, the last album, I would say, was mostly, I'd say it was mostly fictional. I know that there was some personal stuff in there, not just for Shane, but for all of us. Like, we all kind of contributed some different bits, but the whole point of the This Is How the Wind Shifts record was that the first half of songs were contrasting stories with the second half of songs. Yeah. So each song had, you know, a similar story with a different ending. Yeah. It was kind of like the idea of the record was that the name was that anything can change with just the shift of the wind, you know, that at any decision you make, or, you know, at any point in time, something can happen in your life that will change things drastically. But this record is a lot more personal, because everything that Shane discusses on this record did happen, and it's each song is about a different city. So there's some really personal stories from memories and events and people over the course of the last 15 years that we've been a band. So.
Starting in Toronto and ending in Toronto, it's almost as if it's reflecting the tour cycle, almost.
Yeah, I know we didn't want to make a tour record, and we didn't want it to be about that, but it definitely reflects that. The record's not about touring, but it is about, you know, a journey and a lot of times a struggle, and touring can be both of those things, you know. So I think it's both, you know, physically you're traveling and you're doing a cycle, but also mentally and emotionally there's a cycle that goes on, and I think those are the bigger ideas we wanted to bring forth, because touring has that effect, you know, where you can have very drastic highs and lows, and there can be a cycle of starting somewhere and ending up in the same place, kind of constantly coming back to the same feelings, coming back to, you know, seeing the same people, leaving and, you know, coming back and having things be exactly the same, and also leaving and coming back and having things be completely different. So, and that means both for home and for different cities, you know. We have so many people that we've interacted with all over the world, and every time we come back, it's a little bit the same, but it's also a little bit different. So, yeah.
Missing birthdays, missing births.
Yeah, all those things. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Now, I've heard two slightly different stories about the recording process for the new album. On one hand, it was really close to Shane's house and an easy commute to him, as opposed to quite a drive for the last one. On the other hand, I believe it was said by someone else in the band that the recording itself was a little tedious or difficult in some way. Where do you stand on it?
I mean, I guess all of us but Paul Kohler live in downtown Toronto, so recording in a studio that was actually downtown was a great commute for all of us. I mean, Shane literally lives like on the same street as the studio, so that was a little easier for him. But for the rest of us, yeah, like I was riding my bike to the studio every day, and that was really cool. I think it allowed us to be a lot more flexible with the recording, as in that we could pop in and out whenever we want, you know, kind of. And I can see too how that would seem like maybe like a lack of focus, because if you know what I mean, like the ability to just not be there and then come when we needed to be there. But at the same time too, I think we were able to accomplish a lot more by you know, getting to the studio and doing what we needed to do, and then being able to like kind of go back to our day-to-day lives. I don't really know about tedious. I think that the process was definitely like, it was long, and we put a lot of hard work into it and a lot of like late hours, but like we were talking about, like being so close to home, it was easy to do that because it wasn't like, oh no, we gotta like book an extra day in the studio in California and like stay an extra day away from home or something, you know, like could just be like, oh well, I'll just pop in the studio tomorrow night and like get that done, you know. So it was really easy to like tie up loose ends in that sense. So yeah.
All right, so this was the second album for Paul Mark. Was there an increased comfort level this time, or was he just hitting the ground running on the first album and still continuing that?
I mean, I would say that he was definitely hitting the ground running on the first album, and he brought forth a lot of great songs, great guitar riffs, and I think that this record was an extension of that. He really, like, rose to the occasion. I think he wrote something like 20 songs for the record, and we used maybe, I mean, not all the songs on the record were ones that he wrote, but like a good majority of the ones were songs that he wrote entirely or that he kind of brought into the group. So I'd say that like that having Paul Mark in the band was like really showcased on this album. Like he wrote a lot of great stuff and definitely hit the ground running with Wind Shifts, but kept running with this one and took it even further. And he's a really talented songwriter and musician, and having him in the band has been like a breath of fresh air and increasingly inspirational guy for us, you know, like for the rest of us with our playing and our writing, being in the band for so long, to have, you know, a new young guy pushing us has been great.
All right, so let's see. I'm curious about the found audio that's in between some of the tracks as a transitional, echoing the trick that Lawrence Arms did on Metropole. Were you guys actually walking around with microphones getting these sounds?
It's funny that you bring up Lawrence Arms because I really love that record.
Yeah.
And I feel like we were that I was talking about that record or something, and then it kind of got like in the back of everyone's heads, and then we decided to do that, and I was kind of like, wait, the Lawrence Arms did that, and everyone was like, oh, it's fine, and it's like, oh, but I brought this up like 2 weeks ago. Like, so, but I really like the Lawrence Arms record. I think we tried to make it more specific, where with the Lawrence Arms it's very like random what's going on, but we wanted to have specific sounds that you would hopefully listen to and be brought to that place. Since every song represents a city, we were like, okay, well, what do we think of when we think of Chicago? Oh, we think about the L train. Let's get some sounds from the L train, you know, like stuff like that. So we mostly reached out to friends of ours in different cities. I would say that if we were a little bit more organized and better planned on it, that we probably could have just recorded it ourselves, but we weren't. So we were at home when we had the idea. So we reached out to a lot of friends. We did record some of our own stuff, like the ones in Toronto we definitely recorded ourselves. I think maybe even a couple of the other ones we might have had something that we used. So, but definitely the sound at the end of the record before the song Toronto, it says next stop East Liberty, is the sound of the bus that I would take to the studio, because there's a bus that runs from my apartment through Toronto down onto the Ossington bus, it's called. So I like recorded that one day and we ended up using that one. So yeah, it was just the idea that to try to get everyone's heads in the like city that the song was based in.
It's a good trick and it was awesome. Now, of course, the next logical progression is to do a music video where you guys are juggalos or dressed like Rancid.
Yeah, right. I love that Lawrence Arms record. It's really great.
So you
You caught us.
I'm not holding it against you. That's cool. So you worked again, once again, with Jordan Valeriote. He and Cameron Webb, I feel like those guys bring out the best in you musically. What makes him specifically a good fit?
Jordan's a great guy. He's very hardworking. He's very calm and quiet. But he works very hard and very fast, and he just has this way of recording us where he can almost like not, I guess it's like him being quiet, he'll just be like, do it again. Like, so there's not a lot of like, it's just very non-confrontational, and sometimes it's like, he'll say, do it again, and it'll be like, oh, but that one was good. He'll just be like, just do it again. So we work really fast with him, and he's a local guy. We actually started recording with him around the times that we recorded the Short Songs record, and we just thought that was a project that would be better suited for just doing something quick at home. And we had such a great time with him that we decided to do the next couple records with him. So I think it was just a growing relationship that has felt really comfortable for us. This record specifically, we were able to kind of put things in our own, like, do it our way a little bit more, because Jordan lives like 2 hours from where we live, and we used to have to kind of commute to his studio, and that was a bit of a pain. So doing it in Toronto was kind of our compromise. It was like, we want to do it with Jordan, but he's got to come to us. So yeah.
I really enjoyed Short Songs. I'm sure Henry did too. But when I spoke to Josh and Paul Mark last time, it was basically said that the band sort of didn't really start doing covers or anything. The band really started writing original stuff. And from what I understand, Brian, now in Wilhelm Scream, one of my favorite bands, was originally there. But actually, it all ties out pretty well. But any plans on more covers, short covers?
I mean, we've joked around about doing Short Songs too, maybe doing a 7-inch called Shorter Songs. We joked about that, where we do this. The Short Songs was all like 90 seconds or less. We're like, well, what about 30 seconds or less? You know, Shorter Songs. Well, we got a couple of the songs off Short Songs from that record. So, but yeah, that was always the idea. It started off, we did the Support Your Local Record Store 7-inch, and that was 3 songs by punk and hardcore bands, and they were all really short. And then we just kind of decided to write some songs on our own that were like that, and then we're like, oh, well, why don't we pair these all with covers? So it worked out really well. There's definitely been a lot of talk about more short songs or maybe some long songs. We did a 9-minute Kanye West cover, and maybe we can do, I don't know, a Jimmy Eat World cover or something really long, you know?
Some Dream Theater.
Yeah, yeah. In a Gata de Vida or Stairway. I don't know. Freebird. What do you want to hear?
Well, the last one would have to be shortest songs. And you just do like agoraphobic nosebleed stuff, yeah, like 6 seconds.
Yeah, right. We talked about doing an agoraphobic nosebleed song for the short songs, but we thought Orchid was obscure enough for that. Yeah.
Awesome. All right, so based on the music video for a Midwestern State of Emergency, do you guys regularly have to check in on Shane to make sure he's not taking a bath with his clothes?
Yes, we do.
On a serious note, though, that was a good introduction for the album. So, I mean, that was my intro.
We liked working with that director, Max Moore, and it was cool. We actually thought about, I don't know if you saw the second video we did for Face of the Earth, but both of those videos seem to have this like good and bad Shane element. Yeah. There's like the dueling Shanes. So we're thinking about just every video now having like more and more Shanes. Be like, next one's gonna have like 4 Shanes and then 16 Shanes, you know, just gonna keep multiplying.
Multi Shane City.
Yeah, Multi Shane City, that exactly, yeah.
So who was the other fox in the scenes when Shane wasn't?
Shane.
Oh, both. So they just split the screen. Okay, I get it.
No, they got a guy. There was a guy.
Okay.
I think that there was an issue too where the first day they got a guy. They're like, oh yeah, this is gonna be like Shane's body double, and he was like taller than me. He was like 6'6" and like just super buff guy, and it was like Shane was like and they were supposed to share clothes and stuff, and it's like, oh well, that guy wears like a size 12, and Shane's like, we're like a size 8. It's like, how's that guy supposed to be me? so then they found someone that was closer to Shane. Yeah.
All right, so after bouncing around a very little, you guys found yourself on Arise Records. What about them lured you in?
We've been friends with Craig and a bunch of the staff at Rise for a really long time. We've always had a great relationship with them. We've toured with a lot of their bands, and we've seen how hard they work for their bands. And firsthand from being on tour. So it just seemed like a good fit. Like, we had put out a couple of records on Hopeless, and they were great, and they're also really great friends of ours, and we just felt like it was in our best interest to try something different, like, you know, for only the sake of diversity, you know? So working with Craig and Rise just fell into place, like, really easily, because we've been friends for so long. So, they've been very successful for a lot of bands, and they've been successful for us so far. Like you said, the album has performed better off the bat than most of our records have in the past, so that's been really cool to be able to finally work with those guys that we've known for so long.
They're just gobbling up established talent and new talent. It's a nice little blend that they've got going on.
For sure, and then now they've just, like, signed a merger with BMG, so it's gonna be cool to work with some new staff in the international markets. We tour so much overseas and stuff, so to be able to have more of a team in Europe where we tour a lot, it's gonna be really cool. Yeah.
All right, so we briefly talked about This Is How the Wind Shifts earlier, and I don't remember if I asked the other guys, but there are two tracks in the middle, This Is How and The Wind Shifts. If play them simultaneously or put them in Audacity and have them go at the same time, they form an entirely new track.
Yeah.
Any plans on doing the Flaming Lips Zyreka kind of four discs, kind of just have it four separate things?
We did the 7 inches. We did like a box set basically for that reason. We made a box set of 7 inches for This Is How the Wind Shifts. I think it's like 8 7-inches for the purpose of having 2 7-inches with blank sides that you could play at the same time if you had like a full 2-turntable DJ setup. So that was very much inspired by the Flaming Lips. Like, just I wouldn't even say I'm super familiar or like a fan of their band, but I'm definitely a fan of their output as far as music goes and artwork, and I'm a big vinyl nerd and collector, so seeing that kind of stuff, it's like, wow. There's also this band that we really like called Mount Eerie, and the guy, it's like basically a solo project for a guy, and his old band was called Microphones, and they released a record that was like, one record was just the drum tracks, another record was like the guitar, so you had to like listen to them all at the same time to like even get the whole song. So it was very much inspired by that too. So
what was making it hard on people?
Yeah,
that's cool.
Right.
Now, speaking of your vinyl collection, getting to talk to you, I've known about your obsession with Hot Water Music Records, and one of my favorite bands, by the way, and you talked about it in good detail on a fellow alumnus, Damien from F'd Up.
Yeah, right.
His wonderful podcast.
Yeah,
and
that was a great experience. I've known Damien for a long time, and him inviting me over to his place to chat was just super fun, and we were able to talk about vinyl and being nerds and collecting, and also just about the Toronto music scene and the upbringing of Silverstein and a bunch of our peers and stuff. So it was really cool. I was really stoked that he invited me.
So I understand you've pared back on your collection a little bit.
I think if only to grow. Like, I think I've just decided to stop collecting multiple copies of the same record and try to get more copies of other records. So I certainly haven't stopped buying records, but I've stopped buying the same records, you know, every time it's repressed. So, yeah.
Color of a Maid or type of thing? Or
yeah. Yeah, I've got like 25 copies of Fuel for the Hate Game. So, yeah. Yeah.
And do you regularly have contact with the Hot Water Music guys? I think.
I mean, I wouldn't say regularly. I definitely see them every time I can when they play in town. We've definitely become friends over the years through touring and through me going to their shows. I think once they found out that I was a big fan, we had actually toured before that with them, so we kind of knew each other. And then they found out what a crazy fan I was, and I flew from like Japan to see one of their shows, and they were just like, wow, that's crazy. Like, we'll put you on the guest list and make sure you're all set up. So yeah, whenever they come to Toronto, we hang out, and they're actually on Rise Records now too. So the last time they were in Toronto, Craig came up for the show, and we all went out after the show to hang out. So it's always great having connections with bands, both that you're friends with and that you're fans of, kind of all treated as peers, and to be able to run into anyone in any city, anywhere in the world, it's great to just be able to connect and hang out and catch up. So
I think Jason's in Brooklyn, so that's not too far, right?
Yeah. I definitely haven't seen him since he's moved there. He was living in Atlanta for a while, and I hung out with him a couple times there, but I haven't checked in with him yet in Brooklyn, but definitely great seeing those guys anywhere.
Yeah, Chris and George, I think, still in Gainesville, and then Chuck's in California. So they're all...
Chuck more often because he does the Revival Tour, so, and his own touring. So he comes through Toronto quite a bit, and it's usually great. He always has a good pack of friends and good artists and bands out with him. So it's always a pleasure when that guy's in town.
We caught that a couple of years ago, and it was definitely a good time.
Yeah.
You should lobby to be the first bass man,
right.
Acoustic bass.
Bloomberg's got me covered, I guess, yeah.
Awesome. Cool. All right, so what else do you have planned for 2015 that you can talk about?
We're doing some overseas stuff and some international touring. We're going over to Europe with the band Boy Sets Fire, which is going to be really cool because they're a legendary band, and they're so massive in Germany that, like, we're so gracious of them bringing us over. They're going to be really huge shows. We know a few of those dudes and some of their crew from touring over the years, and it's going to be really great to hang out for 2 or 3 weeks in Europe. We're going back to Russia after that. Just before that, we're going to South America for a couple shows. We haven't been in a couple years, so just some, fun international stuff.
Well,
some more Silvertooth shows.
But when in Russia, try not to pull a Bloodhound Gang stuff and get...
I heard, yeah.
Got to tread lightly over there.
Yeah, we've been to Russia twice now, and both times it was a little scary, but very fun.
But actually, next album, you can talk about international stuff, different countries.
Yeah, right. We thought about that. We're like, maybe, I hope none of our international fans will be offended that we kept it to North America, but maybe next record will be... I'm trying to think how I say I'm alive and everything I touch in, like, German or something.
I say record some sounds anyway, just in case you might need it.
Right. It's true. Start archiving those sounds.
And then won't you feel dumb if they start coming after you, like the bus company starts suing you? Or?
Yeah.
Where's our cut?
Yeah, right.
All right. So, stuck in a desert island, no hope of rescue, one album you have with you the rest of your life.
It's such a tough one. I gotta say, like, Beach Boys' Pet Sounds. I know I talked about it on that podcast, but I've got, like, a bunch of different copies of that record that are all from different countries and different, you know, years and pressings and releases and stereo and mono and all this stuff. So it's kind of a go-to answer. I love so many different records. I'm sure I would get sick of that one after a while, but... It's a classic. It's really good. Yeah.
The international stuff. Are the tracks in different orders, or is it all just...
Sometimes. Yeah, I've actually come across it a couple times where there's some different tracks. The artwork is always the most. Like, there's one from Australia that doesn't even say Pet Sounds on it. It says, like, The Fabulous Beach Boys. And they're all wearing, like, barbershop, like, suits and little hats and stuff. Like, it's like they clearly... The label in Australia didn't accept the change they were making at the time, and they wanted to keep it more, like, the surfy stuff. And so it's cool to see how... It's been released over the years.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.